Or don't be like that kind of the boredom with what's going on. We spent our vacation harvesting quinoa in the Andes, but do you think anyone could find us a croissant for breakfast? You know, that kind of
You
elitist.
know, you think anyone can find us a croissant? A croissant? Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name's Jaquetta Sotmari, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kasmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
So Katie's going to kick off with, and I hope you're ready for this, because we usually don't start off this way, with Tales from Dirt Campfire.
Yeah.
This is a segment where we find tales of myth, of horror, of the paranormal, ghost stories, of folk legends.
Yeah, spooky stuff.
Spooky stuff, urban legends from all around the globe on the internet, and we retell them here around the digital campfire, so.
Gather around, listeners.
Yeah, I'm excited.
This one is called Big Sandy Haunted House. Big Sandy Haunted Home.
Okay.
The author is a middle-aged adult. From Montana.
That's what they say. That's how we lead.
And the paranormal category for this is a haunted life.
Okay.
All right. I have seen many shadows and hear knocks and footsteps in my house.
Okay.
One night, I saw a shadow peeking into my doorway.
Is it the shadow person?
Another night, I saw a woman with blonde hair and a red flannel shirt in my room, but there was nothing below her waist.
Okay. What? Courtney Love is in your house, circa 1995. Great.
Or why do you think it's a ghost? Maybe you just got your
Courtney Love's in your house.
Yeah, got some blonde in there. Your husband's like, yeah. Oh, it must be a ghost.
There's a woman going, woo, and just back away. Vern, we've been found out.
Yeah. One night, me and my husband both saw a shadow go into the bathroom.
Okay.
Except my husband said it looked like it walked into the floor to him.
he didn't want to get up is all. I ain't going to the bathroom. Walked to the floor. I'm not going over there.
We both also heard a knock on the wall another time.
Mm-hmm.
He also told me that one time he was standing in front of his TV and I started to move.
And then he was like, bitch, I can't see the game. Ghost yourself.
The other night I was awoke from sleeping to see a big tall shadow standing by my door. And the feeling I got was it wanted to hurt me.
Okay.
Also, my TV used to come on all by itself until I moved it.
Excuse me? It just didn't like where it was. I'm going to come right on.
I wonder if they can follow you because I have had ghosts.
The shadow people?
Yeah. She's saying, because I had ghosts in my house since I was a kid. I have lived in different states and still almost all of my houses have had something happen in them.
So we all know we've talked about shadow people here numerous times in the past. You see them out of the corner of your eye, fleeting. Sometimes they're wearing a hat.
Yeah, they have like a big black hat.
And then sometimes they have glowing eyes, but just for a split second.
Red eyes.
Yeah, red eyes. If you look directly at them, you're not going to see anything. It's just kind of
it's
side
a peripheral.
Eye.
Yeah, I'd be like, I kind of see you over there.
Yeah.
One night I was at my friend's house and I had walked by one of her rooms and found the light on from under the door.
Okay. Did she get down? That's the height of paranoia, you know?
I didn't tell her at first because I thought someone left the light on. So I went back to the kitchen and watched down the hall where the room was and I never saw anyone come out or in that room. So I went back to the room and noticed the light was off. So I told her. She opened the door and we saw no one in there. So the light went on and off by itself.
Okay.
She was watching. She was staring down that door. She was like in the other room, like looking down the hallway, watching.
And whatever was inside, I was like, shit, dude, turn it off. Yeah. They see us. No, dude, if you turn it off, they'll know we're here.
Yeah.
It's too late.
No, they're in the closet. Yeah. It's just some teens. Another time my cat woke up growling at something. She was lying by me and started growling and then backing away from something. So I touched her and asked her to calm down. Calm down. Another night I had a feeling something wanted to touch me and I said out loud that it wasn't allowed.
Don't even.
And it seemed like it went away.
Okay.
That's it.
That's it? That's the whole story?
But
it's
I like
creepy.
It is creepy, but I like the idea of the blonde. In the flannel shirt and no pants. But I think she meant that there were no legs. It was just like an apparition from the waist
up. Hey, man, that's your interpretation.
Yeah, I'm trying to make it scary here.
I'm telling you, it's just Courtney Love is in your house.
And
hands free.
And then the comments are, I don't think you're being followed. You just may be more sensitive to the presence of spirits than other people.
What is the perk? I read this a lot in Tales from Their Campfire. What could possibly be the perk of being sensitive to other things? Because people just seem to be freaking out.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like anyone's like, I'm really sensitive to spirits, and one gave me a stock tip.
Yeah, right. You know? I'm like sensitive, and they told me to watch out, because I got that bee is throwing some shade.
Yeah, or just like, don't go down the dead man's curve.
Yeah.
You know, like a warning of any kind like that.
But here the comments go on. Isn't there... experience from Big Sandy, California. Also, Big Sandy sounds familiar. Any reason? And so the comments are like, yeah, why are you calling it Big Sandy? Because there's no sand. She doesn't explain.
Yeah, it doesn't have to do with Big Sandy. What's it called again? Big Sandy Haunted
Big
House.
Sandy Haunted
Maybe
House.
She's Sandy. Who knows? She left out the apostrophe.
Yeah, she forgot to say that it was in Big Sandy. That's the
I mean, maybe we could assume from the title.
Yeah, all the people that are commenting are like, oh, why is she calling it Big Sandy?
Now they're stuck on that. What about the shadow people?
No, nobody cares about the shadow people.
What about the fact that she felt attacked and there was a woman with no pants on?
No, they want to know why Big Sandy.
Why Big Sandy?
And everyone's like, oh, I just Googled it. And there's a Big Sandy, Montana. Well, I'll be darned.
That's where it goes from.
Here's me thinking it was a sandstone home, and that was somehow very relevant to what was happening in said home.
What in that story gave you any idea that it would be a sandstone home, and that was integral to the story? Strike this comment. No.
And then they're like, why is the house called Sandy? And it's like, it's not the house.
You see, people get really, you know what, no titles in the future. No titles. Yeah. Nothing that could throw people off. Because they've missed the whole essence of the piece.
Yeah, right. So everyone's talking about Sandy. It's the house. It's the woman inside.
Yeah, it's Courtney Love. It's shadow people. It's all these things. It has nothing to do with them.
And then someone says, the last comment is, please don't ask someone to rewrite a story that's already been submitted.
That's right.
I don't know if they don't know not to do this. It just gives us all kinds of copies of the same story, and it leads to confusion.
Wow.
Yeah, because people are like, explain yourself. Why are you writing?
I guess the author doesn't come back later and say, look.
No.
I was just trying to give it a title that would draw people to it.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. Yeah. It's really more about shadow people, which is, you know, the essence of the story.
Yeah. The essence people.
So, here's some kind of advice.
Kind of advice.
So I don't know if I'm going to say...
Well, Advice on Advice is a segment wherein we find advice on the internet that stinks.
Yeah, it's unqualified, and we want to improve upon it by giving advice on that advice.
So here it is, Advice on Advice.
This is... And I love reading business talk stuff. This one is called How to, quote-unquote, Ripple Your Leadership.
Ripple? What?
I don't know.
I haven't heard... Oh, business speak.
Yes.
I'll just say that the one that I really don't like now, the term that people are
is
using...
Is it wheelhouse?
No, out of pocket.
What does that mean?
That means...
I'm broke?
No.
That's what out of...
It does.
Is it out of pocket?
Yeah, but in the business world now, it means that you're unavailable, like you're on a trip or something. So
What's the pocket?
Nobody knows. It's just like if you're not going to answer emails or calls because you're going to be out of pocket.
That's weird. I wonder what the derivation of that is. I'm like, I'm not available.
Yeah, going to be unavailable.
I'm in pocket. I'm all up in pocket. I'm not leaving pocket. I was born in pocket. If you ain't never been to pocket, don't worry about pocket.
I'm staying in the pocket.
Yeah, I'm deep in pocket.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going.
I'm
interesting.
Hanging in the pocket. Okay.
So this is how to ripple your leadership.
Okay, rippling leadership.
This is from Kevin Cruz from Forbes. As a leader tasked with seizing new ground. This is why I'm not a leader, because I can't take that seriously.
Yeah.
And improving on an organization's performance, do you start with the systems, the people, or yourself? Get out the mirror. It says, according to leadership expert Chris Hutchinson, leaders can't be effective unless they understand their own values. They have to start by understanding their own values and visioning their personal future. This sounds woo-woo already.
It does, yeah.
And recognize their unique strengths and weaknesses. And his new book, Ripple,
a field manual for
leadership that works. For getting out there in the field and making sure they plow. Hutchinson demonstrates that true leadership is like skipping stones in a pond.
No.
See, these metaphors, when an engaging conversational tone and fun whiteboard-style sketches, this is all the stuff that I hated about working in an office. He teaches that the secret to leadership is that power isn't in the stones, it's in the ripples, y'all. Y'all, I added myself. It's in the ripples.
It's in the ripple, not
As
the stone.
As stone throwers simply can't set a robust, long-lasting ripples if they're not starting from a place of self-alignment. Is that how that works?
No.
Is that how skipping stones works?
You mean I'm not rippling as I should at work?
No. You need to ripple more. You may be thriving, but are you rippling? It says, to get into alignment, there are only three steps.
Okay.
Decide what matters most. Me.
Okay.
Yes, that's what matters most. So you have to consciously and explicitly state your own values from a place of clarity and empathy. You know what? I love it when a supervisor just starts off a Monday morning meeting by talking about how he or she, like, her personal values.
Yeah.
That's really what I want to hear.
Yeah, yeah. You know, this is where I'm coming from. And this is yeah. what matters.
This is what matters. To reveal what matters to you, you have to write down your top 10 values. Are you going to do this? Then you have to underline three.
My top 10 values start off with a good breakfast.
Is that a value?
In this case, yes.
A damn fine meal. The kick off the day. I'm talking with a stiff
coffee.
This is
my value. I value that. And okay.
I mean, because my value is to stop wasting my fucking time. Okay. Like, can I start the meeting like that? Yeah. And the meeting dismissed.
And I do all the talking and
you do all the listening.
Yeah.
Everyone else listen.
Yeah.
It says here, chart your own course. All right. So you have to do that as well. So it says, he tells people, you have to do visualization.
Oh, okay.
Woo-woo. He tells people to close their eyes and picture their own memorial service 3 years from now.
Oh,
that's what I do for my boss. That's I picture
it.
My boss's memorial service.
Wow. So you that's a threat.
Yeah.
Imagine you're dead.
In 3 years. What in do I care years. About this job? I'm out of here. Like, I'm going to spend the next 3 years of my life in middle management. I'm going to drop dead. So it says visualize your memorial service. Who's attending it?
Oh, man.
Well, I've decided that I want to have people, a $10,000 random open bar, so everybody's going to be there.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have those Chinese funeral strippers.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah, that's right. In a previous episode, we talked about having strippers at the funeral, so people will go.
People to attend. Free booze and strippers. Yeah. Who's not going to be there?
Right.
People be like, Jaquetta Sotmar, never heard of her, but there's still 8,000 left on the tab. And these strippers. Then, who's attending, and what do you want those people to remember and say about you? I want people to be like, man, she was a tough customer.
That's it.
She was tough. And what do you want these people to carry on as your legacy? I mean, drunkenness. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. And the last thing, drunkenness, what do you want people to carry forward?
And
about your legacy.
Speaking.
More podcasts.
Yeah. No, just saying the absolute truth. Not keeping holding back.
Not holding back.
Not holding back when talking to your coworkers.
So that goes under the she was a B category. She was a tough customer. The last one, number three, is know where you're awesome. Are you often surprised or disappointed when others in your organization can't do or see things that you do? Oh, yeah. This is a sign that you don't know your own strengths. So basically they're saying that you got to know when you're awesome.
Which is all the time. What?
Which is all the time. It says, in order to figure out where you're awesome, you have to make a list of things you find easy and fun.
Okay.
And then circle or add anything that people often compliment you on. Oh, you're always on time.
Yeah.
You always have something to say, don't you?
Yeah.
Validate by asking someone you trust to look at a list of strengths. So I should write down mine and be like, do these seem like me?
I'd be like, ooh.
Ooh, who's this? Like, who are you describing here? Is this Stephen Hawking and Bill Gates shoved together?
Nobody works here.
Yes, with a side of Janet Yellen. This isn't you. This isn't you at
this
all.
This isn't anybody.
This isn't anybody.
This is a robot.
So that's how you began to ripple. So if you want to know, what's ripple a field man? I don't like this field man manual part.
You know, boots on ground?
Yeah, you just ride up on a horse. Shotgun in one hand.
It's a boots on ground instructional
On how to be awesome or know when you're awesome, decide what matters, and chart your own course, ripple.
When did you first realize you were awesome, Jaquetta?
Just now. Actually, after I made that list of knowing when I'm awesome.
Yeah.
I don't, things like this, this is what puts me off from ever being, wanting to be a leader ever. Like, I definitely am the kind of person, if I were elected a leader of any kind by accident, I might be like, hey, you guys know what you're doing? Is this a setup?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
no,
I don't
but
know.
You have to speak the lingo. I think that's the only thing with leadership is that you have to speak that corporate speak.
You know what you should do then? The next time you do a meeting, you should write ripple on the board and then make it, what does it stand for? And make the staff come up with an R. You know, repeat it. I, instruction. P, personal. I don't know, whatever. Make up stuff.
Precision. Yeah.
L. Leadership.
E.
Everywhere. That's going to be the ripple. Now get back to work.
Yeah, all of you. You're all mini leaders.
Yes. Get out there and ripple. Ripple, my friends. Ripple. I'm going to rise up my arms.
Ripple.
Like, ripple.
And everyone raises their arms and wiggles their fingers. And that'll be the ripple.
That's the ripple. So, ripple. And then just jazz hands is what it looks like. And now back to work. Team, you're awesome.
Yeah.
You'll be like, oh, what are we supposed to do this week? You'll figure it out.
Because you're awesome.
When you ripple, you shall know. and they shall call you Ripple. Okay, so what do you have? I see some advice.
It's not ridiculous. Ripple. Well, this is definitely a snow ripple.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that much, but this is some advice.
Okay.
This is Dear Amy.
Okay. So bonus advice.
Bonus advice.
We've gone from corporate to personal.
Right. Because we got you covered.
Yeah, we got you covered.
In all arenas.
Once you're done rippling on the job, you're going to whip your ripple out at home. Put that thing down. See what happens. All right. So we got Dear Amy.
I am a 37-year-old married man living in the epicenter of the tech industry.
The epicenter? Okay.
My wife and I have been married for 10 years and have a and have a 4-year-old son.
Okay.
The problem is...
My wife.
That it seems just like we're living together and not really married.
Oh, no sex.
There is no family time, no sharing between the two of us, and no intimacies.
Yeah, you put that one first. That's really the problem.
He's trying to, like, ease us into it. We don't care.
Yeah.
Well, you can say it first. It's all right. I have talked to my wife quite a few times about this, only to receive rebuttals. We both work at tech firms, and whatever spare time there is, she goes to her parents' house with our son or by herself.
Wow.
She wants to get that.
I mean, she may be taking the kid to see the parents for some legitimate reason, but is she staying there with the kid?
Yeah.
Or is she
cutting
out? Yeah,
she's there with the kid. She's like...
That's what she says. Who knows?
I have tried different ways to try to find out what's going on with her, but she doesn't have much to say. I don't know.
What? This is like,
hey, what's going on with you?
Just start poking at her.
This has been going on for some time now, and I feel left out.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You are.
Because you are being left out.
Yeah.
At the same time, there is someone at my child's school whom I have started to like. She's the mother of another kid in the same class. While we haven't really talked, and I don't know if she's really looking, I feel like talking to her and asking her out.
Dude, break it off right now.
Does this mean it's time to move on? Signed, unsure husband.
Ooh. Yeesh. Okay.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
I've got a whole...
But here's the thing. I mean, we talked about this before. If you're going to have some kind of affair, like, you cast a wider net than that.
Yeah.
No kidding. Like, one of your... child's friends, parents, that's not going to come back on you?
That you fancy? You don't even know.
You don't even know who she is.
She just didn't talk to her.
But here's the thing.
Her voice is terrible.
I mean, what about the idea that if you guys are noticing each other, you think no other parents are around? You think somebody like me is not around? Like, yo.
Look at that.
Look at that.
Yeah.
He's about to throw a stone and get some ripple on. He's going to ripple all over this place.
He's out there rippling.
Yeah. Look at him.
Rippling in the schoolyard.
Yeah, he knows he's awesome.
Dear Unsure, it is bad form, to say the least, for a married person to ask someone out. But being attracted to someone else doesn't mean your marriage is doomed. It just means you're alive.
Yeah. And the fact that your wife is ignoring you means your marriage is doomed.
Yeah.
Let's get back to that.
Yeah, it's exactly. Many marriages go through a period where the spark, the thrill, and the intimacy seem to vanish.
Mm-hmm.
This is
it's called marriage. They've been married for 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah. Jeez. Maybe they need a refresh.
This is especially true when parents are working, demanding full-time jobs and raising children.
Yeah, both busy.
You should try at least two things before you consider giving up on your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Connect with your family as a unit. This means that on days
that
off...
That sounds so sterile. Family unit. Weird. Assemble.
I know.
Shape of a picnic.
Think of the drawings in 50s manuals, like how to have a nice family life.
Yes.
And they're just...
How to enjoy your family.
Yeah.
Boop.
This means on days off, you and your wife take at least one outing with your son. Mm-hmm. The three of you can kick a ball in the parks.
Wait, they only have one kid?
Yeah, they only have the 1 4-year-old.
Oh, so...
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah. A splash in a wading pool together or visit your local children's museum.
Mm-hmm.
Many parents divide and conquer their time, so it's hard to build a family life when you don't actually spend time together.
Are there any museums? Is this Palo Alto? Because they're saying it's the tech capital.
Yeah.
I can't imagine there's a single cultural thing there. Like, I can't imagine
that
there's anything there besides, like...
Go to a wading pool, then.
More work.
As they say. Yeah. Or kick a ball in the park.
Yeah, or do some coding for fun.
Yeah.
With your kid.
Second, you and your wife should have date nights where you can spend time alone as a couple. If you're both motivated, you can repair your relationship, but it will take mutual commitment and perhaps some professional counseling to get there.
His wife is not interested. Yeah, it is basic.
Very basic. It seems like both of them are uninterested. He's just like... He wants to just avoid the conversation with her and just go.
He'd rather have an affair with one of his kids' classmates' parents,
mm-hmm.
or he thinks it's a parent who actually knows who it is,
yeah.
than deal with the situation.
Yeah.
I just think that it's you gotta look. I mean, I'm not saying you should ever have an affair, but does it occur to people to go a little further afield? Do you know what I mean?
Go elsewhere. Yeah.
Go elsewhere.
Outside your town.
Like, outside of your tiny, tiny circle. I'm sure. Look, if you're looking at this woman and she's looking at you and there's like any kind of spark, there's nothing else for the other parents to do. I used to be a teacher.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be found out so
quick.
Yes.
When the parents would come to pick out, there's all the just looking at the parents, looking to see what they're doing because we got nothing else going on.
Yeah.
You know?
So you will be found out if you do this at your kid's school. But the thing
how's
is,
that going to work?
It seems like both the husband and wife, if this is accurate,
not
have no interest in each other and are finding ways to avoid each other, and they don't even want it to continue. I would say then, if you don't even want to try, like, be honest with yourself.
Yeah,
and if you don't want to try,
it's been 10 years.
Then get a divorce and then move on. But don't do the affair first. Cause that's just going
to
be
why. There's better ways to get out of relationships. I think people sometimes use an affair to get out of relationships.
Yeah.
I know people do. I've had people that I've talked to say that that's what they do. That they don't feel comfortable just being like, this isn't working. They need something else to be like, oh, we broke up because I had an affair.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no, you were having an affair because this wasn't
it wasn't working.
Yeah.
And you didn't want it to work out.
Yeah.
So you did that.
It seems like a lot of hassle. Just have a conversation. They're probably two intelligent, rational people. You know, they're working. They've been living together for 10 years. And you can't have a conversation, then you got problems.
Yeah.
You know? Wow, that's interesting.
But it just seems like very, like, basic advice. Like, hasn't he thought of what Amy
said? I would hope
to?
So.
Like, you should try to spend more time together or get some counseling.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he can get any time with the wife. She seems to be taking off.
Yeah.
And taking their kid, too.
Yeah.
Maybe she's got another family.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be interesting? She's like secretly having not an affair, but she has another husband who's not in tech.
Yeah.
He like actually knows how to do stuff, like works with his hands. He's a woodworker or
something. He's a woodworker,
not
right?
The whole thing. He also does yoga.
Yeah, does, so he's sensitive.
And all he wants to do is ripple. That's his whole stilo.
It's like, he's rippling like you wouldn't believe.
Like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
This guy could never do it.
I doesn't know how to ripple.
So I have a piece of fun news for me. Finally, Hello Kitty comes to America. It started off in Las Vegas. It says this weekend, so this was like August 12th, Hello Kitty fan gathering in Las Vegas won't just be cute. It's a 3-day event called Hello Kitty Super Cute Friendship Festival.
No.
I wish I could go. They're calling it Kitty Stock, Lully Kitty Palooza, and Coachella Kitty Tella. Combined, they're live action shows and a really interactive, fun activities featuring the anthropomorphic kitten. So there's apparently the spokesperson called Piper. Like Hello Kitty, what I love about Hello Kitty is they never use people, ever for anything.
Okay, yeah,
it's just this person, this thing called Piper, a spokeswoman. She's an ambassador, an effervescent fan who describes herself as a friend of Hello Kitty. Don't worry about it. I'm a friend.
Really,
a friend of Hello Kitty and a friend of the festival.
Okay, just a friend. Piper.
Okay. None of your business, really, I guess. So she says they have two stages. There's a lot of stuff going on. So, you know, Hello Kitty was born in 1974. She's an 8-year-old, but there's some new information.
She's always 8.
She's always 8.
No matter that time has gone by.
She says here, I forgot about this from my childhood, but Hello Kitty has a twin sister
who is evil.
So, no, she's good. So Hello Kitty's full name is Kitty White. She has a twin sister named Mimi, so it's Kitty and Mimi.
Well, but
Mimi White.
We don't hear from Mimi.
Well, we used to, but I haven't heard from her since I was like a little kid.
What is she doing now?
I have no idea. Mimi has a cat named Charmy, and she has a lot. There's a huge bio for her, so I'm going to have to search online. It's like a deep bio. It has weight, her parents' names, her astrological sign, her preference of pastry.
A woman who tells her weight will tell you anything. So that's why Mimi had to be shut up.
Yes.
Because she was a blabber.
She kept talking.
Mimi was like talking about the dark side of the Hello Kitty family.
It says here, Hello Kitty is a girl. She walks on two legs, wears clothes, and has a bow in her hair.
Yeah.
She drinks milk.
Yeah, she's not a cat.
She's not a cat.
Yeah.
She drinks milk, but she's not a cat. Yeah. She has a family. She enjoys playing with her friends. She has a pet cat. So she's a little girl.
She's a little girl.
All of these things, she's a little girl.
You know, I just find it sketchy that Mimi is nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I don't know. Where Mimi, Hello Mimi. Or maybe it was Goodbye, Mimi.
Yeah. Well, you made me go to the Hello Kitty Spa, one of the only ones in the world.
Oh, my God. I was so jealous. I'm still jealous.
When I went to Dubai, and it was this...
It was an extravaganza.
It's in a mall.
Of course.
So you go into the spa. It's all Hello Kitty'd out. And they keep trying to sell you all kinds of Hello Kitty things. I bought you a lolly.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Once you get there, is it assumed that you just want to stock up on as much Hello Kitty? Yes. Like, you're probably an anomaly. They were like, she doesn't want all the stuff. Why is she even here?
I got a cappuccino while I was getting my nails
done. Did it have the Hello Kitty face on
it? Yes, it did. And then they would position it so I could take pictures and with my nails next to it.
It's awesome. They're like, please Instagram this.
Okay. But it was all the little girls in there.
Were they all little girls?
Oh, there were a lot of little girls in there. And their nannies.
And were the nannies just like, oh, dear Lord.
The nannies were giving them hot chocolate. And the girls, of course, were getting their nails done so they couldn't hold the cup. So it was like with a straw.
Are you serious?
And the nannies would hold the cup in the straw.
Tomorrow's nightmares. What's going to happen when these girls wake up to the reality that no one cares?
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
I was like, nope, I wish I had a nanny to feed me
the
hot chocolate. But I don't. I'm going to have to sit here.
I'm going to have to do it myself. I am really, like, I have to check up on this. If they are coming to New York, don't even ask me on that day to do anything. If there's a Hello Kitty 3-day extravaganza, I will be there. I've missed every Hello Kitty thing. Bye,
life. All right, well, let me know, and I'll go with you. And I want to know more about Mimi, and I'm going to have Mimi Day.
We should wear t-shirts. Where's Mimi? We want Mimi. Hello, Mimi. It's like a rival.
Yeah.
A rival thing. Hello, Mimi. So, yeah, Hello Kitty fans out there. And it's interesting because Hello Kitty fans span, it's like everybody.
Yeah.
Boys, girls, men, women, everyone seems to really like Hello Kitty, or they just go along with
what's not to like.
Exactly. You know what's not to like? Mimi.
Yeah.
That's what's not to like.
Mimi's going to blow the roof off Hello Kitty.
She has so many
friends.
She's
got secrets.
She's got secrets. She knows how old Hello Kitty is.
And really.
They're the same age.
She know, and
they're
and
twins.
They're twins, so they probably shared a room.
She's like, actually, I was originally Hello Kitty.
Yeah.
They pushed me to the back.
Yeah.
She's Mimi.
Yeah. Maybe, you know what? It was supposed to be Hello Mimi all along.
Yep.
And Kitty pushed her down the stairs.
Oh, no.
And she broke her leg.
Yeah, maybe it's like whatever happened to baby Mimi.
Yeah. And so it became Hello Kitty because they had to do it.
But then Hello Kitty was like, I'll break you off some. And then she never did.
Never did. Never did. But now Hello Kitty is a power to be reckoned with.
She ripples. She ripples.
Nobody's business.
Hello Ripples.
And Mimi is forced because she doesn't have the power.
Just to be in the background.
But she knows. And Mimi is
going to talk. And Mimi's weight is online for some reason. Yeah. That sounds like Hello Kitty's doing it. Right there. I do not weigh 21 ounces. This is bullshit.
I'm 16 ounces.
Yes.
Everybody
just
knows
like
that.
You.
We're twins.
We're twins.
Because it's me.
All right, what do you have?
Drums, please.
Hey, You Know It is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com.
I'll talk about Paris for a second.
Okay. Because we know how much we love French people. And French culture.
Have you heard of this? It's called Paris Syndrome.
No.
Paris
is it like
syndrome.
Jerusalem Syndrome?
Well, basically, what it is, it's a psychological disorder exhibited by individuals visiting or vacationing in Paris.
This is like first world problems.
Yeah, it's Japanese visitors are particularly susceptible. What happens is these people save up their money. They hear so much about how wonderful Paris is.
Who is saying this?
Well, they're seeing it in, like, movies and just people talking about Paris. You know, Paris is supposed to be awesome, right?
I guess. Well, not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's just, you know, maybe every culture has another culture or a city that they aspire to. Like, that seems like the, you know, like, for some people, it's New York. I'm always amazed that British people come here and they're like, oh, New York, New York. And then here we're like, oh, London, London is so great.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like that kind of thing.
It's that kind of thing. Okay. But also I think it's people who don't travel very much. And so,
oh, it's their first. Oh, and they've really been looking forward to
it. And they
this.
Save all their money and they get there.
Yeah.
And it's not what it's cracked up to be. They feel like.
they feel betrayed.
Especially Japanese media. In the magazines, they depict Paris as a place where people. On the street look like stick-thin models. Women wear high-fashion dresses. And
really?
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and they get there and they find that there's a lot of other foreigners there and the French population are far more overweight than they thought they would be. And they basically, they start, they get into a delusional state and they hallucinate.
And they're like, mon Dieu, sacrebleu, vive la France, célébrité.
Well, they're the Japanese ones. And they feel, the Japanese people, they feel persecuted and prejudiced. And
by the French?
Yeah, they just...
Who cares what they think?
Well, Well, this is just like kind of a state that's they get awful. Into.
Aww.
And they have aggression and hostility.
So are Jack people acting out over there?
Yeah, and they're just, they can have dizziness and sweating and all kinds of, you know, other physical symptoms, too.
They don't have a lot of fortitude, these people, I guess, that are visiting.
Yeah, and it's similar to the Jerusalem syndrome, what you're saying. And it's a severe form of culture shock. And they get in there. And they have, actually, at the French embassy, they have a 24-hour helpline.
In Japanese?
In Japanese. Well, it's actually run by the Japanese embassy to help these tourists who are suffering deal with it.
Wow.
And they say at
I
average,
can't believe, I think maybe Japan has surpassed our culture in ridiculousness and superficiality with this.
I don't think it's just, it's the people who travel.
No, I'm saying just the people who travel. So they've gotten so caught up in the, whatever the media hype is.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think it's analogous to like, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if it's like this now, but when we were in college, everybody wanted to go to London,
mm-hmm.
right? Then you get there and you're like, But maybe it's not built up as... you know, mm-hmm. you know, as exciting as this France thing.
Yeah.
Well, this is terrible.
At least 12 people per year suffer from it, at least.
How do they, what do they just start hitting them with a beret until they come back to their senses?
It's, well,
they just come at them with baguettes and chocolate. And wine? And so, like, what do they do?
They should have a room, like a fantasy Paris room,
mm-hmm.
like, where you go in and everything is just like you would imagine it.
Like they Epcot have a few, Center.
Yeah, they have a few stick-thin people.
There's a guy with a beret and a striped shirt with a bateau neck.
Yeah. Yes.
There's a mime in the corner.
Right, right. And then there's, like, someone releases one red balloon.
Yes. Gigi plays in the background. Maurice Chevalier comes out.
Yeah, and there's some wine and a piece of chocolate.
A piece of cheese as well.
Yes.
What do people, I mean, it's interesting because I know from people who live in Paris, they complain that Paris is like a museum, that it's not like a living place, that mm-hmm. it's not like a, you know, they don't see it as a real part of, you know, the culture. And I've heard about this in other European countries too, where it's like you have all these tourists coming and expecting mm-hmm. these things from you, from your culture. And then they get there and they're like, they're just regular French people doing their thing.
Yeah.
Like they're texting.
Beings. Yeah.
You know, they're having a coffee. I mean, it's like.
They have emotions and feelings and wants and hopes.
I wonder why they're so fixated on Paris, though. That's interesting.
Yeah, because I guess because they're just sold this image of
this
of bill France.
Of goods.
And they say it's an idealized image of Paris.
From what period, though? That's the, you know what
it's
I'm
just,
saying?
From now.
Like, I wondered in their ideas that they're looking at, because this is how London is kind of presented or was presented to us in the 80s. Mm-hmm. As like, we would go there and it would be all like, pip, pip.
Yeah, yeah.
That shit passed before we were born.
Right.
Like, so what we grew up on BBC, but it was BBC from like before our time. But I still wasn't expecting to get there and be like, there's going to be princes all over the place and like hound dogs running and, you know.
Yeah.
This like kind of.
Jodhpurs everyone's wearing.
Yes. Or... clotted, you know, cream and jam. And there's Jodhpurs. Of course. Jodhpurs. I mean, classic. Like so bowler hats.
Yeah. They have, you know, there's the cultural difference and the language barrier, exhaustion.
from just France.
Yeah, they're just exhausted from traveling, and they try to cram everything into their trip, see everything.
Every French, France is huge!
Yeah, so they're trying to do
Paris
everything.
Paris is huge.
They have the jet lag, and it all contributes to it. Japanese, and they picture Paris as the land of dreams, the land of beauty, culture, and romance.
Huh?
And then they find out just what you're saying when they visit Paris, that it's a regular place.
People live there?
It's disorganized.
Yeah.
Many areas are unclean.
Mm-hmm. Unsafe. Just
and
like here.
There's noise. Yeah. You know, and it's just like not what they thought it was going to be and they can't take it. And then few Japanese speak French and vice versa. So they can't.
Oh no, I hadn't even thought about that.
So
okay, let's just be clear that nobody speaks French.
Yeah.
You know,
like, well, even if you speak French, you're not
even
good
if you
enough.
Speak French, you're not gonna be you wanna do your French thing, go to Montreal. They're nice. They'll talk to you. Go to Belgium.
Yeah.
Or go possibly go to anywhere else besides Paris. I have a friend who went to Paris like a year ago, and she said something similar happened to her. She was like, it was awful. People were rude. This, that, that. I was like, we told you not to go to Paris as your only exposure.
Right. You need to go
to I mean, there are other beautiful parts of France that you know, mm-hmm. that you can see and you can enjoy. It's just like coming into Midtown Manhattan and expecting everyone to be, you know, really friendly and, you know, I actually had a guy one time accost me in the subway. He was like a traveler. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I thought New Yorkers were supposed to be friendly. I said, who the fuck told you that?
How did he get that idea?
I don't know. That's what I asked him. He was just like, well, I was like, look, I'll tell you where your train is, but I can't let you go around here thinking that people are going to be friendly for no reason. We're busy. I'm in Grand Central Station. Like, really? You're lucky I didn't just push you out of the way. This is as friendly as it gets, dude.
I know. I get people, I work near the Empire State Building. So
that's right.
I often get people like, where's the Empire State Building? I'm like, look up in the air.
They got the four R's.
Oh, and also with the Japanese culture, it's a little more rigid and rigidly formal, actually. And
as I've heard from many of my Japanese friends who will never go back to Japan.
Oh, really?
After, yeah, they found that, and this happened with a lot of my students from Korea as well, especially the women. Once they got out, they were like, oh, we can do whatever we want. I'm like, well, yeah, that's kind of within reason.
Yeah.
Then they have no plans to go back.
Yeah, but now when they get to Paris, and there's a rapid and frequent fluctuation in mood and tense and attitude and delivery of humor. Well, I got something to say about that, but the worst humor in the face of the in the world is French clown humor.
Oh yeah, it's not my favorite either. And you know what? I do like Commedia dell'arte a little bit, but yeah, I know what you're
not
saying.
Not the Commedia dell'arte that I'm thinking.
No, I'm just saying I'm not one of those people who's anti clown. Yeah. You know that kind of stuff. But what was the French clown humor in specific?
The example would be I saw Cirque du Soleil's Bellagio.
Yeah.
And they had this segment.
Too much story.
This segment with not these clowns that were on the roof of this little house that was on this Lazy Susan-esque thing that twirled around. And they would do some weird physical and would comedy and would make sounds and go meep. And
the other one would go
meep back. And apparently that was hilarious.
To whom?
To some people in the audience. I don't know who they were.
I have to say, I'm not a huge fan of Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
It's that humor.
Yeah.
That quote unquote, the humor.
Yes.
Like a guy comes out holding something and he runs around and then, oh, it's confetti. There's no water in it. It's like, didn't see that coming. Can you get back to the stripping, please?
Yeah. Right. I went the wrong
way. Go back to the contortionists.
Right. But to piggyback on this whole thing, then on the other side,
Is it about French people going to Japan and freaking out?
No. The French people in Paris who live there, they get anxiety and vacation envy because they're left behind. Like, they see all these tourists coming to town and everyone's on vacation having a good time and they're like, I'm here working.
Oh.
And so...
Yeah, that happens. I feel that sometimes in New York, I don't know if you do, especially at Grand Central, Times Square, like really rush places where they're just like, I'm like, I'm the only person here that's not enjoying this right now. Like, this is not fun for me. I don't want to be near Times Square.
Yeah, not all French, after all, can afford to go off to what most consider their well-deserved 5-week vacation in the sun. They have to stay behind, keep the buses and subways running, and serve visitors cheap rosé.
Oh.
And so the Parisians who are obliged to stay behind,
I bet you they have attitude. I would.
Yeah,
I would have a lot of attitude. That explains it. Why people don't have a good time.
Yeah, they sit in traffic. That they're still sitting. The light's green. Nobody's moving.
Oh my god!
They let others cut in front of them in lines.
Is it a big driving city?
They let others cut in front of them in lines, less out of courtesy than out of boredom. They're just like,
go.
They weave along the sidewalks and teeter into the streets, concentrating on trying to send their and read text messages. So they're just trying to block out everything that's going on.
They're trying to get around people. And people are probably asking them in broken French, where is the Eiffel Tower, huh?
Yeah.
Really?
So there is a bit of a depression that is going on with these people who are left behind.
And this is in August. They say it's the worst time to visit Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is why. So it's a confluence.
Everybody's off in August.
Everybody's gone, and those who aren't are pissed off. They're people who are stuck in the service industry.
Yep.
Dealing with you
mm-hmm.
and all of your other, the other tourists that are there, and you've come there to you've come there to have a baguette.
Yeah.
With a little bit of brie and some wine. And most people are like, we're just going to Le McDonald's to like grab something right. or Le Starbucks right. to grab something. What would be the equivalent? What do people do when they come to New York that they want to see? Like, I've had people visit me and I've taken people to the Empire State Building a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've taken people on the Staten Island Ferry. People were like, I don't want to pay for I want to see the Statue of Liberty. I want to pay for it. Here we go. We're going on the free ferry to Staten Island. We'll have a beer on the way over. We'll have a beer on the way back. I guess maybe go to the museums. That's something that actually annoys me as a New Yorker. I feel like I can never go to the museums.
Yes.
Because it's just packed full of people who are there rushing in to the Met to see one thing.
Right.
Or they're rushing into the MoMA, the Guggenheim, or whatever it is to see one, to crowd around one thing.
Yeah.
And I read that the average amount of time spent in front of a piece of art is 7 seconds.
Oh my God.
Can you believe that? And it's got to be worse in Paris. Everyone rushing to see the Mona Lisa, and then you see it for like a couple of seconds.
And everyone says it's smaller than I thought it would be.
Yes. I would replace it with a postage stamp and see what they say then.
Yes.
I dare someone to say it's smaller than they thought it would be. That's crazy.
It is. And so, they're really, envious. And so the suggestions to help people who are left behind, don't, when you talk about your vacations, make it more inflated than it is. Like, instead of saying, I spent 3 weeks in the Tanzanian rainforest with Jane Goodall hoping to improve my grade 8 calls. Just be like, oh, I went to the...
I went to Canarsie.
Yeah.
For a weekend? Dip a foot in the water.
Yeah, right,
Wow.
Or don't be like that kind of the boredom with what's going on. We spent our vacation harvesting quinoa in the Andes, but do you think anyone could find us a croissant for breakfast? You know, that kind of elitist...
Do you think anyone can find us a croissant? A croissant? While we're out there with the quinoa.
The bragging and the boredom with the fabulousness of the whole thing. Don't act like
that. Don't go like that.
Because you gotta, that's what
they're
saying.
Keep it small.
Keep it played small for everybody.
What about these? I'm just afraid now if I go to Paris, I'm going to see a group of Japanese people just swoon and go down.
Yeah, probably.
Like... grasping some cheap rosé in one hand and baguettes and cheese in the other.
What is this?
This is not France. Ce n'est pas France. Okay, so I have a thing here. This is some legal news that I got on my own from the ABA Journal.
That's right. You do it on your own.
I do it on my own. This is white collar crime in that category. Judge lied about claimed toilet lid attack outside courthouse, jury finds.
What?
So a former municipal judge in the village of Waterloo, New York, lied when he said two thugs choked him out and beat him with a toilet tank lid outside the courthouse in 2013. So this never happened. Basically, this guy went out behind the courthouse himself, found this toilet lid, smashed it up, and then committed insurance fraud.
Wow.
Can you believe that? His, police said they found shards from the shattered toilet tank lid around him. Uh-huh. But the doctors and nurses said that he didn't have any injuries of being choked or hit. He could have at least choked himself a little bit, himself.
No, did the thing from Liar Liar with Jim Carrey and put his head in an actual toilet.
Yeah, and did something with it. Said the Bartow, that's the judge, spent 9 days hospitalized and on a pain pump. Where there you go.
Oh, duh.
Yes. The jury heard evidence and that basically this was a way for him. He wanted to get a life supply of painkillers. The hospital bill was $40,000 and it was paid for by workers' comp. So I guess that's why they sued. Okay. Because that's not fair.
No.
Everybody puts into that.
Yeah.
Why workers' comp? Workers' comp in my mind is like there's a guy, he's a pipe fitter.
Yeah.
And his hand gets squashed.
Right.
This is like a judge was hanging out behind the courthouse.
Yeah.
And somebody came and beat him with a. Okay.
That's sketchy. That's not workers' comp.
But here's the worst part about it. He was suspended with pay for a year. Suspended with pay.
Wow.
Before the claimed attack, he was on medication for lower back pain and gout. And he said he'd made 20 to 30 insurance claims. This guy is just looking like he's just all about it. He's just trying to load up on that back pain medication.
That's it. He's like, this isn't too bad. I get the year off and I get unlimited pain medication.
It's like Rush Limbaugh stuff. But what's with the desperation of going outside and being like, oh, this will work. I'll smash up this. You know how thugs do.
Mm-hmm.
You know how they wait behind a building.
Yeah.
And then they don't bring anything with them. They work from the area. They work from the alley.
They improvise.
Yeah. So if there's something back there, like a toilet lid, they will use it against a judge.
Yeah.
And then they didn't rob him. They were just like,
they just wanted to give him a beat.
Justice.
Like, you're going down.
Yeah.
The drain.
Today. Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas.
emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise, and let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at HeyYouKnowIt.com. Thanks. That you have, I'm curious. It looks like a gigantic ball.
Yeah, there's. I have images here of these pods.
Okay.
And they're little homes or offices.
And it's a perfectly spherical object.
Spherical. It has this. It's just the way that architecture is going today.
Oh God.
And what they're where it's headed towards, actually.
Okay. That like looks like an olive, actually.
It looks like there's a building. It's like a massive building that looks like a giant olive.
Why is that the thing? End. I feel like we're gonna look back on these things when we're old and be like, that was dumb. Remember when everybody tried to make a ball?
Yeah.
And then remember when they all started rolling when the earth shifted that one time?
That's right.